Welcome to the Ministry Marks podcast. I'm David Haynes, and I'm joined by Thomas Majors. Thomas, how are you?
Man, I'm doing good. It's been a good day.
It has been a good day. Man, we've been recording podcasts all day. We've been hanging out now for several hours together, and it's good just getting caught up, you know, as old friends and all the life experiences. This has been good after that summer break that we took to be back in the swing of things recording podcasts. And we are so glad that you, the listener, has joined in with us today because we've got a pretty good topic going on. Thomas, what are we going to be thinking about?
Well, David, I got a question for you.
Question?
Yeah, here's my question.
Okay.
What's the most iconic question you can think of?
Oh, what's the most iconic question?
Well, I know what the answer should be.
Yeah.
That you just haven't thought about because I sprung it on you in the
moment. What's the most iconic question? Oh, I don't know. So what are you thinking?
How many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Roll Pop?
Absolutely. What in the world may never know. So one, two, three, crunch is what I remember.
When I'm teaching like a class and we're doing research papers, I always tell them that all good experiments start with a question. And I use that question right there.
I gotcha.
I tell them, it's like, you know, you've probably heard this commercial before. How many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Roll Pop? And then I ask them, what do you really have to know to figure that out?
Yeah. What do you have to know?
If you're going to figure out, scientifically speaking, if you're going to figure out how many licks it takes to get to the center of a Tootsie Roll Pop, what do you need to know?
Okay. Well, first, you need to know what a Tootsie Roll Pop is.
Exactly.
And then
you need to know the thickness of that outer layer.
You do.
And that if it's consistent between Tootsie Roll Pops.
Yes, I agree.
What else do you need to know?
I'm just thinking the variable of a person's tongue. Your tongue is probably different from my tongue, so a lick may be different.
Okay, so you need a common roughness to the tongue.
Okay, right? Okay, I would agree. Yes, what else?
What about salinity? How is some saliva more acidic than others?
Sure, I would think so.
Do you press harder on that Tootsie Roll Prop?
That's
than
right. Man, there are many factors. I've never thought about this.
How long are these strokes?
Oh, the strokes of a lick. Oh, golly, I never thought about that. That is so interesting. Why are y'all discussing this in classes that you teach?
Because when you're doing something with a research paper, you have to ask a good question.
Uh-huh.
What is the style of preaching in selected sermons of John A. Broadus?
Oh,
so what do you have to know to have that? You got to know what a sermon is. You got to know who John A. Broadus is and part of his life. You got to know what style is when it relates to a sermon. And then you got to know what sermons you're selecting. And once you get some of these variables together, then it all just begins to fall in place.
You know, it sounds like you're an expert on the preaching style of John A. Broadus.
Technically, I've written a dissertation. I've got a book on my shelf at home that has my name on it. Nobody has ever read it except for me. I'm not even sure that my chair read it or the people around the room in the dissertation.
Right, we can be done with his majors, boy. Let's pass him.
Let's get him out of here. But yeah, so questions. Questions are good things to ask. Sometimes people, you know, one of the things I've always told my church, I'm never offended by questions.
Uh-huh. What are you offended by?
Statements.
Say
you're ugly. I'm offended by that. Have you ever thought that you were ugly? There's been times.
Well, you know, questions play a big role in our lives. You and I are both married. I've celebrated 28 years of marital bliss. And how many years of marital bliss have you and Amanda experienced?
A few. It'll be 24 years this coming
and
November.
So we had to ask, will you marry me? Boy, that's a big question right there. Jesus asked, will you follow me? You know, there's a lot of big questions in our lives.
Amanda agreed to marry me.
That's so nice of her.
You didn't what about stiff? April?
Oh, she agreed to marry me also. I'm thankful it wasn't a shotgun win. That's so funny, man. All right, so
what are we talking about?
We're talking about questions that we might ask God. Like if you could ask God a question, what question would you ask God?
Okay, so let's lay out some ground rules.
Let's do that.
Let's think of some questions for topics or, you know, let's just say, theological question.
Okay. All right. So if we would ask, if we were to ask God a theological question, what would it be? Okay.
Maybe a natural, or we could even say a cosmological.
Cosmological, something about the natural world.
Something about natural world.
Okay. A natural. So, all right. So we got a theological question, a question about the natural world. Okay. All right. Okay.
And then what about a personal question?
Ooh, I like that. I like that. Theological, natural, personal. You know, even the listener right now could pause and go ahead and tell us what their questions would be under those guidelines. I like that.
All right. So the whole idea is, if we had an audience with God the Father right now in our ministries or our life, where we are right now, we're not dead.
Nope, we're not. We're both alive.
We get to ask Him. He's going to answer, and we get to live the rest of our life with that knowledge.
Ooh, okay. Can we tell people the answer?
Yes.
Thank you. All right. That sounds really good.
Okay. And then at the very end, let's do this. What if we only had one question that we could ask God? So, you know, we got to have a whole podcast worthy. So we got to have three questions to talk about. Yeah. But then we can ask that idea. What's the one question?
Yeah.
That we would ask. Maybe it's the theological. Maybe it's the personal. Yeah. Maybe it's something different from any of those.
Yeah. Boy, that's good.
David, how about you start first?
All right. I'll start first with the theological question.
Theological. Yes.
The theological question. This is what I would ask. When Jesus died on the cross and His dead body was removed from the cross and placed in the borrowed tomb of Joseph of Arimathea, what did the soul of Jesus, what did Jesus do from Friday until He was seen in the garden on Sunday morning? I often think about this. The whole passage in the New Testament, taking captivity captive, going to hell and kind of showing what He did. You're shaking your head.
It doesn't say that He went to hell.
Going to paradise. Did He lead those in paradise? He didn't lead those into the presence of the Father post-resurrection.
Well, the passage says that He went and preached to the spirits in prison.
The spirits in prison. What do you think the spirits in prison are?
I think it has something to do with the ark, Genesis 6.
The ark in Genesis 6. You don't think it's about paradise for the Old Testament believer in God?
No.
Gotcha. So I've always thought it has something to do with that. Oh, we may approach that topic later.
Have we not talked about this before?
No, I don't recall you and I ever having this discussion. Definitely not on the podcast. I don't believe we've had this discussion on the podcast.
Okay. All right. Yeah. That's interesting.
So here's my question. What did He do? Now, let me tell you why I've been thinking about this. My mother texted me at the time of this recording, a number of weeks ago, she texted me about a Sunday school lesson where the graves were opened. Have you and I discussed this? The graves was in one of the
Either in John or Matthew. When Jesus died on the cross, that moment He died, the graves were opened, and the saints of old came walking into Jerusalem.
But they didn't walk into Jerusalem until Easter Sunday morning. The graves, it appears, unless it is a out-of-place record, it appears the graves were open on Friday and the saints were not seen until the resurrection morning. And so that has led me down this idea of what in the world, why were the graves open then? Why were they not seen? Now, most theologians will say they were not seen until Jesus, the first fruit of the resurrection, was viewed. And then the saints came into Jerusalem. I have so many questions. Was this saints worldwide? Was it saints only during that time period? Was it saints who believed in Jesus but died during His earthly ministry? Was this Old Testament saints? Was this all the believers? I have so many thoughts on that I don't have answers for, that we could follow up and do a lot of podcasts on that.
You know what? I've always just assumed that saints that were resurrected died again.
What's that?
I just said it.
The saints who were resurrected died in?
Again.
They died again. Okay. So that's a good thought. Some believe they ascended to heaven when Jesus ascended, but I think there would be a record of that because it would have been mass, or at least more massive than just one person ascending. But I think they would have died again, like Lazarus.
But the whole reason I would even question that right now is because you said that they didn't rise until Jesus, the first fruits of the resurrection, arose. Well, if that meant that Jesus arose the first fruit of the resurrection, and these are somehow products of that resurrection, but Jesus is the first fruits, then I would assume that they haven't died again. I make a theological distinction between resurrection and resuscitation.
Absolutely. Yes. And I think you're right. There's a difference between resuscitation and resurrection. Lazarus was, quote unquote, resuscitated because he died again. So there are theologians who believe that they ascended with the Father. Now, those that I read believe that the number was few. They put it as those who rose, the saints, were only those who believed in Jesus during the ministry of Jesus and died during the ministry of Jesus. But Jesus didn't come by and go to the grave and weep and raise them, so that we're only talking about a couple dozen people. 20 folk got up out of the graves and then showed themselves alive in Jerusalem. And then when Jesus ascended, they did too. So, dude, this is such a, it is so interesting. It is, there is a lot to unpack on just a few words of scripture.
Yeah.
And so I would want to ask, so what actually happened between "it is finished" and "Mary, who did you think I was? The gardener?" You know what I mean? So yeah. what happened with the whole grave? What happened during that time? So I would want to know about that. What is that, a 72-hour window or a 48-hour window, 54-hour? I would want to know what happened Friday evening, Saturday, Sunday to brunch time. You know, that's what I would want to know. So that's my theological question. God, what went on during that Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
That's a good question.
You're very kind.
So if I was standing before God and he said, you know, you have one question, theological question. I really have a bunch, but I think I would settle on this, or at least this is what I would say right now.
Yeah.
The Bible says of that day and time, no one knows, not even the Son.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jesus knows now.
Yes.
I think my question would be, as much as I could, a twofold question. Does Jesus know now when that day, set, and time is?
Uh-huh.
And if so, when did he find it out?
Yes.
Because I think that's very interesting. There's so many people who believe still
that Jesus doesn't know.
That Jesus doesn't
know. He's at the right hand of the Father just waiting. You got Father when? Yeah.
I know. Fully God, fully omniscient, except for that.
Yes.
Like God's built up a firewall in Jesus' brain and not letting this information in.
So I agree with you. I think that Jesus veiled a portion of his omniscience during his earthly ministry. He purposefully veiled his omnipresence during his earthly ministry. He couldn't be two places at once. He could be here or he could be there, but he couldn't be both. And so I think he veiled the knowledge of his return for the purpose of not sharing it, not telling it. We are to live as if today may be the last.
Now we know he obviously connected himself to human flesh, and as Paul says, took on the limitation of human flesh.
Yes.
So that's a great thought, that he veiled his omnipresence. It's possible that he veiled his omniscience. We know for a fact he veiled his glory.
Oh, yeah.
Because he revealed, he pulled back some of that veil on the Mount of Transfiguration, and he shone brightly. That, you know, Mark says that his clothes turned whiter than any launderer was able to make it, that there was this great light that shone around him. And so in that moment, he's pulling back the veil of his glory. So it's quite possible that he did veil his omniscience and honestly could say at that moment, I don't know. Not even the Son of Man knows.
Yeah.
But I do think he knows now. And so I would want to know for a fact, does Jesus know?
Right.
And if he does, then when did he find out that knowledge? Okay,
so let's go ahead and venture into that. When did he find out his knowledge, that knowledge? So if I'm correct that he veiled that area of his divinity, I could argue two things. I could argue, one, that he knew it at resurrection, or two, he knew it after ascension. You might could argue, well, if God didn't want others to know, then during that window, post-resurrection, pre-ascension, then theoretically he still didn't know. But I would venture resurrection morning, he knew. What do you think?
I think it's resurrection morning. Yeah. And the reason being is because Jesus, as with resurrected body, that put down that body that could die and took up a body that could not then die, the resurrected body, he displayed miraculous things in that body. He appeared behind doors that were locked.
That's right. Upper room, disciples, boom he's
boom,
there.
Boom. Yep. He's going places without walking.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he is.
Do you think he traveled at the speed of thought, where he thought, then he was there? See, I almost think in heaven, we're going to travel by thought. Wherever we are, we're then, boom, we're automatically there, is what I wonder. I don't know. It's kind of what I think.
Yeah.
Possibly.
That would be
interesting.
Be like Harry Potter.
So I've never watched that. Who is this Potter Harry guy?
in Harry Potter, they travel by apparition? No. Apparate?
Yeah.
I don't remember what the term is, but they travel like, kind of like that idea.
Way.
Yeah.
I gotcha. All right.
Very
Thomas.
Interesting.
Yeah. So those were our theological questions that we would ask. What's up next?
A natural question.
Natural right. question.
Here's my natural question, get and then we'll it. Go to yours. And it's really based off of a conversation that we've had before.
Really? How about that?
When did you create the angels?
Oh, okay. Okay. Right. When was it? You know, we have a friend. He believes in a day zero creation.
That's right. Yeah.
Day zero. There are others who will say day. What? Some might say day one. Some might say day four.
That's right.
Five.
Day four.
Day four. Yeah.
Yeah. I might would say day four or day six.
Or day six. That's right. Yeah. We have talked about this before. I think on a podcast.
On the podcast before. I think that's one of those things that just lingers in my mind so many times. Yeah. I ask myself, all right, What do you think today? What do you think it is right now? You know, and it might change today. By the end of the day, I might be thinking something else. I might be saying, no, it's day zero.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't think it's day zero. Yeah. not right now, I don't.
Yeah, man. Oh, yeah, that is very interesting, because of the whole when were the angels here? When did Lucifer fall? There's so much that goes on with that. That's a very loaded question of when were the angels created? And if we knew that, then we could kind of reverse engineer some of those other thoughts that had to have happened after and then before, you know, after that, but before this, you know, so that's a good thought.
You know what I've just thought of?
Yeah.
What if God would answer that question as, well, when I thought it was the appropriate time to create angels.
Oh, man. That is something that would waste a question.
I know. Because, I mean,
at
in the truth.
At the appropriate time.
It is. I mean, he always does it at the appropriate time in the appropriate way.
Yeah.
You talk about creation. You talk about the way he's going to end the world. All of that is at the appropriate time in the appropriate way, according to his honor and glory.
Yeah.
That is true.
Yeah.
Man, I would just hate it if he answered me like that. I think I would want, you know. Well, you know, I created the world, and within 32 seconds of me creating that world, I said, let there be angels.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would want some details to
it. Yeah. That is really good. All right. So your natural question is very closely related with my natural question, which would be, God, in our understanding of years from current, this is 2026, from current, how many years ago was the earth created? So that's what I would want to know.
I would
want to know, because see, I've always questioned how long were Adam and Eve in sinless perfection? Was it moments? Was it months? Was it millennia? How long were they in sinless perfection? And if God would answer that question from our perspective of time, then we would know the age of the earth. Now, I think we can very easily trace the years from the fall. Many people do great work on Abraham lived this many years ago.
Right.
Noah's flood this many years ago. And we can take time periods back, but what is the age of the earth? Then you have that other whole idea, you know, was Adam, you know, at Adam and Eve were not created as babies. God did not rock babies in a rocker. They were created as adults. So was the earth created mature? Was it created at 38 billion years old in appearance whenever it was in all actuality 5 minutes old? So I would want to know that. And I think whatever God said about the creation of earth and our understanding of time would help answer some of those questions that go along with the age of the earth.
That's good. Yeah. That's one of the questions that I would have too. Can I just throw out a couple more questions?
Sure.
That I
would definitely, just for fun.
Just for funsies, yeah. Before we go to the personal question. You know, a theological question I would want to ask, was that really Samuel that the witch of Endor called up?
Or was it a demon? Gave the appearance of Samuel?
I've used a Ouija board before. Have you?
I have too. I apologize for even saying that. But yes, I have too. Whenever I was a teenager way back when, 100 years ago.
Same. Yeah. And this one time that I remember using this Ouija board, there was one of the guys there who, this is going to be sound very supernatural and mystic, that this thing said that he was going to die, and he died. He did. Yes. And I think you would not be able to convince me otherwise. We were speaking to a demonic we were speaking to a demon in that moment.
Someone might argue, well, demons wouldn't know that evil knows evil that's about to happen or has happened. I really think so. They know
or
what's going on.
Or they caused it to happen.
Or they caused it to happen. Yeah. So me and years ago served with a guy, great guy on staff with us. He's now retired. And his brother was murdered. This is decades ago. And they couldn't find the brother's body. And his parents, who were believers in the Lord, had been told to seek out a medium. And basically the theory behind it was demons know demonic acts. And if that demon speaks to that medium can tell you where it's at. And they found his body.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That person gave them enough information, theoretically to get to help solve the case, as in who was the murderer, solve the case of where's the body. Ooh, boy, that's a good one about Samuel. All right, Thomas, let's go on to our last question we would ask, which is a personal question. I'm going to tell you what mine is, and I will argue for it. I will argue against it. And I want you to tell me, where you land. So here is my personal question that I would ask right now. God, when will I die? When will I die? I'm saying I would ask that. In all actuality, I probably wouldn't, but I'm saying I would ask that. But dude, what if the Lord were to say, you know, from the time of this recording, what if it's tomorrow, or what if it is next week? How crazy would you want to have a heads up? Now, there are many people who get a heads up. You know, theoretically, you or I could go to the doctor tomorrow for something, and they say, oh, you've got a dreaded disease. Oh, you've got 6 months to live. And we would know that barring a miracle from the Lord, our time is limited. There are some who know their time is short. But would you want to know when you're going to check out? Would you want to know? And if you did know it, I think it would greatly alter the way that we live, and spending time with people and, you know, all that kind of stuff. If you only had a short time, you'd probably quit your job tomorrow and just spend time sharing Jesus with people. Hang on, I thought that's what we do for a living. So, but anyway, I think, you know, spend time with the families and do those things that were important.
All right, so I just wrote down, when you said that, I said, I wouldn't.
You would not?
I would not. Okay. I don't want to know that at all. And the first thing is I'm an overthinker.
Uh-huh.
And I would think about this every moment until it happened.
Uh-huh.
I'm also, I don't want to say fearful, but I think I would be fearful. If I know, like for instance, I know I'm going to be speaking at a place that's going to be difficult to speak at in September.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's been on my mind ever since I've been asked. Every day I've thought about it.
Okay, kind of like whenever I invited you to speak at a revival. Dude, you worried and worried and worried about it.
Dude, I thought about it every day for until that time, up until that day got there. Yeah. I thought about it every day, how every one of those conversations would go. And I think, you know, I would overthink it and I would be fearful of the moment.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it would be on my mind and I would just be like, it would be hard to get it off my mind.
I got you. I think I could compartmentalize. I think, but I mean, it's a big deal, but I think I could compartmentalize. Go ahead.
In some sense, I put down, I'm just going to give you the first reaction. I would not ask that.
Yeah.
And the first thing I wrote down is because I'm sinful.
Uh-huh. Oh, you're sinful, as in you want to go out and do this sin before you check out?
I'm just saying.
I hadn't even thought about that.
I'm just saying.
I'm thinking about sharing Jesus with folks.
While you're thinking about sharing Jesus, I'm thinking about telling some people off.
I've only got 12 days to tell that person what I really think.
If I'm dying then, they ain't going to kill me today. We're fixing to go and have this out, buddy. How dare you push me in the third grade?
I can tell you from Nettleton.
Have you seen those shirts of the penguin and it's holding like this knife and it says it says flight was never an option.
So I got a fight.
I don't think I would do anything morally wrong. You know what I'm saying? But I am sinful, and I think it would be like, all right,
I'm invincible until that date.
I'm invincible until that date.
Oh wow!
If that's my date, I can do whatever I want.
I've never thought about it like that. Oh my goodness! Yeah.
You want to borrow my sin nature for a little bit? You want to walk around in my sin nature for a while? And I just think it would give too many opportunities for me to sin.
Why? I have never thought about that. Weird, twisted way you took this question.
I'm just saying, I mean.
That's so interesting.
Festivus.
Festivus for the rest of us.
Every day would be Festivus for me until.
Yeah, I really feel. I've got some grievances with you people. Oh, man. That is really something to think about. I want to say that's great, but it's terrible. I don't want to say it's terrible. Oh, my goodness. That's so interesting.
Well, I just think about the human fleshly side of me. Sure, I think, you know, I'm reading through the Lord of the Rings right now. And so Gandalf says, you know, Frodo tries to give him the ring and Gandalf says, no, I would want to use this for such good, but it would wield such a power that it would be used for evil. And so in my mind, if I knew what that date was, I think I could answer like Gandalf and say, no, I would want to use it for good, but it would wield power in me so great for evil. You know, I just know me. Okay.
All right, Thomas. So what would be your personal question that you would ask God?
Before I answer that, let me just say, y'all may never hear this whole conversation because I might cut out all of that.
Oh, but buddy, I heard it.
I see the judging look you're giving me too. He's backed away from the table right now. He's nervous. I think what I would ask, personal question, does my grandfather know that I surrender to the ministry?
Oh, okay. All right. So tell the modern listener or the recent listener the history of your grandfather, your relationship with your grandfather. Let them in on.
So my grandfather was a pastor and I caught the bus there at his house every morning, would walk to school from there sometimes. If I didn't catch the bus, I was walking to school and then we would come back. My sister and I would come back there in the afternoons. I went with them multiple vacations during the summer. He picked me up every Sunday. And I went to Temple Grove Baptist Church with him when he was the pastor there. I went to Bigby Baptist Church when he was the pastor there. Becker Baptist Church when he was the pastor there. Greenwood Springs Baptist Church when he was the pastor there. All these different places. But when he died in October of 2002, I was a drug addict.
Gotcha. You were about 20 years old at that time, 19, 20?
Yeah, 20 years old. Yeah. I was a drug addict, Because I remember the day that Amanda came and told me. It was strange. I was working with Kenneth, Amanda's dad, and we pulled up to their house, and Amanda was there, and she shouldn't have been there. She should have been at work. And I thought it was strange. Her dad said, "What are you doing here?" And she whispered something to him that I didn't know what it was at the time. But now, after I've thought about it for years, she whispered to him, because I heard just a little piece of it, but it didn't really register. She whispered, Thomas's grandfather died.
Uh-huh.
And then when she told me, I just remember like my whole world just seemed like it just fell apart in that moment. There was a lot of fear that went along with it. I remember thinking, if God has taken him, then that means that there's no hope for me.
Oh, okay.
And so it was later, actually, because he died in October, Amanda and I, we got married in November of 2002. And then it was not until September of 2005 when I surrendered publicly to the ministry. You know, God had been doing some things in my life.
When did you become clean? Was that 04-ish or 05?
It was June of 05.
June of 05. Okay, gotcha.
So yeah. Tom was born in August of 04.
Uh-huh.
And I went to rehab in June, uh-huh. Actually at the last part of May. And so it was about June when I put as being clean.
Uh-huh.
And it was sometime around July or August that I really felt God was doing something to call me into the ministry.
05, yeah. And then so, you and I would meet in 07.
That's right, yeah. And so I would just ask that question.
Yeah.
You know, does my grandfather know?
Right. So theoretically, the last memory, I'm using air quotes, of you he has was that of a drug addict far from the Lord.
And I think this would answer some other questions that I have.
Yeah.
You know, because I often wonder, what does a person, to be absent from the bodies, to be present from the Lord, what does that person in heaven know of our lives now?
Yeah.
And what we do and who we are?
Yeah.
In some sense of my mind, I don't think there's holes in the floor of heaven and they're looking down.
I agree.
Because then they would see sin and grief and all of those things. And I don't think that exists in heaven. And so I would just want to know that.
Yeah. So that is a question that I'm often asked as a pastor. I'm going to say I'm asked that every 6 months by someone. What can grandma, grandpa, mom, dad, loved one in heaven see? And my answer has become this: spiritually significant events. And I try to leave it vague, because I believe people in heaven, if you look at the book of Revelation, people in heaven know earth events, can see earth events. I think so spiritually significant events. Now, a person may take that to mean my loved one in heaven can see a spiritually significant event in my life. And so I'm not opposed to that. I think a person in heaven, if heaven rejoices over the salvation of a sinner, or if angels rejoice over the salvation of a sinner in heaven, I think that those who are in heaven will see angels rejoicing and will say, "Hey, what's going on?" And it would be the salvation or the prodigal returning home or whatever. And so I think there are significant events of earthlings that heaven dwellers would be interested in seeing. But I agree with you. They're not watching everything. They're not seeing the sin that's going on. They're not seeing, let's say, a heinous murder. They're not seeing the heinous murder of their beloved grandchild. They're not viewing that in heaven. That would be the opposite of heaven.
Exactly.
But I do think they can see spiritually significant events. Yeah, I think so. Well, that's good, Thomas. That's really good. So,
all right. So if you only had one question, what would it be?
Yeah.
You can pick one of the three that you've already given, or you can give another one.
I gotcha.
Mine would be. It would be the personal question.
Okay. So can I Can I ask a different question?
Yeah. Yeah, and, I think so.
And Thomas, you and I have been friends for years, and you know that what we're going through right now with our daughter. And I know you edit this. Do not edit this out. If you edit this out, we're no longer friends. And so you know that it has been 25 months since I've seen my beloved daughter, and it hurts. And you know that. Many who are listening to this podcast know that our daughter is going through something that many families are experiencing. My daughter is 26 years old, and she has distanced herself from basically everyone in our family for 2 years. I've not seen my daughter for 2 years. And I would ask right now, God, when is this going to end? When is this going to end? I would not ask, what would you want me to learn through this? I'm pretty sure I've learned that. I think I'm supposed to grow in the knowledge of what I've learned. I have learned that a relationship with your child is not essential. A relationship with your Lord is essential. Mm-hmm. People can, I would not ever ask for this. This is the worst thing that my wife and I've ever gone through. But if you've ever gone through what we're going through right now, previously, you might have never said this, but you might have thought it. I could not do without speaking to my child. I could not do without whatever it is. And I'm telling you, the only thing you cannot do without is a relationship with God.
Amen.
Everything else is secondary. And going through something like that will hurt. You know, a number of months back now, had some information. Our daughter had been injured in a car wreck, was being transported to a hospital by ambulance. And I'd always dreaded a call like that. But what I didn't know is, or information like that, what I didn't know is that was not the worst part. The worst part is you and your spouse being distanced from your daughter and not being able to call and say, honey, are you okay? Mm-hmm. I love you. Are you okay? Or she doesn't take a call and she won't answer a text message because of a bad advice. And so that's what I would ask right now is, God, when? Because we know that every day that we live is a day closer to the resolution of that issue. And I would ask you to pray for her. Her name is Taylor. I suspect she listens to these podcasts. And Taylor, if you're listening, I love you. You know I love you. Your mom and I miss you. And we want you back in our lives. And your family misses you. Your cousins miss you. Your aunts miss you. Your grandparents miss you. But we want you back in our lives. So that's what I would ask. So Thomas, if you could ask any of these three questions, or would you want to change it up some?
No, I would ask my personal question.
Yeah.
That's the one that I would ask.
Old Papaw. What'd you call him? Papaw?
Granddaddy. G-Diddy. G-Diddy.
Oh, man, that's some good stuff, dude. So it has been a really good time.
Well, David, this has been a really great podcast. And, you know, the great thing about thinking about this is one day we'll get to heaven and we shall know even as we are fully known. For now we see in the mirror dimly, but then face to face we shall know even as we are fully known. And all of these questions will be answered one day. Even more that we don't know to ask will be answered. Thank you all so much for listening. Just encourage you to join us again the next time we publish one of the podcasts. If you would like to continue this conversation, then of course reach out to us on Facebook or through text.